There's a lady in our church, and when she found out that we're, as a church, we're trying to memorize Mark 12, 30, and 31 together, she had these printed up on cards and provided them back here in the back as you leave. So you can grab one of those if you want. You can just tuck it in your pocket or put it somewhere and pull that out and look at it from time to time. But today, what I want to tell you about is the most important thing, Jesus said that we could do with our lives. What I'm sharing with you and teaching you today is about our response. It's not our initiation. 1 John 4:9, 4:19 says that we love because he first loved us. So what I'm sharing with you today, when I talk about the most important thing, this isn't one more thing on your list to do that'll twist God's arm so that he'll accept you, okay? That's already been done through the cross. This is the response to God's love. And what is the response? Well, I think you know as we've been talking about it. But this is also not so much about getting a spiritual birth certificate, okay? I'm going to love God now, and therefore I am saved or whatever. This is more about getting your spiritual driver's license. This is learning to operate on the road of following Jesus. This is what we do as Christ followers. The words of Jesus that I want to bring before you today are the core creed of living out the Christian life, for navigating your entire journey of following Jesus. These words from Jesus are recorded in Mark chapter 12. They're found in other Gospels. But Jesus was responding to the question of an expert of the law, expert of the Torah, or what we would call the Old Testament. And the expert asked Jesus, "What is the greatest commandment?" And Jesus responds by quoting the heart of a passage of Deuteronomy that was recited by every practicing Jew. Every morning and every evening, an observant Jew would recite these words. And it became a creed and a prayer known as the Shema. And it was the first thing taught to every Jewish child. Now, here are those words from Deuteronomy. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them upon your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down at night, when you get up in the morning. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and put them on your gates." And what this creed taught was to love God by following the Torah. This was the core, central for the spiritual formation of any Jew. And this is what Jesus was taught as a child when he was growing up in his Jewish home. But Jesus revises the Shema by quoting the heart of it and then adding to it. He changes it. Jesus says in Mark 12, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength." And then he adds, "The second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these." So loving others is added to loving God. And by Jesus adding to this something sacred, he was saying that loving God is understood as following Jesus. It's very interesting what Jesus does here. You know, the Jews, most observant Jews, were very good about expressing their love to God. But where they really struggled was in loving people. And Jesus said, it's incomplete. Our love for God is incomplete if we're not loving our neighbor, loving the people around us. So this is what is understood from Jesus as the essence of living out the Christian faith. Love God and love others, and love God by following Jesus. So you want to be spiritual? Then do this. That will make you a spiritual person. But let me tell you, it will take all of your life. It will take an entire lifetime to fulfill this commandment, to love God and to love others. Jesus was constantly, challenging people of his day with this dilemma. And the dilemma was this: do I love God by following the Torah, or do I love God by following Jesus? One man volunteered to join Jesus. And maybe you've heard these stories before where there were several people that came to Jesus and said, oh, I want to follow you. And then they had some sort of excuse, or and Jesus said, no, no, no. Well, one of these men, he said he wanted to follow God. He wanted to love God by more deeply. And the man came with this request. He said, Lord, I want to love God and follow you, but first let me go bury my father. But Jesus just abruptly states, he just says, let the dead bury their own dead. Ouch. He's kind of harsh. This guy just wants to love God with all his heart. Just a little delay. But Jesus redefines loving God. And it was important for Jewish people to honor their father's burial. So this was a big deal. And it was important that if one's father was awaiting burial, it was so important that they were told that if their father was about to be, in that period where their father was to be buried, they were told, hey, you can be exempt from quoting the Shema. You don't have to do that morning and evening recitation because we know that you're thinking about your parent who just died. But here's the deal on the burial. Immediately after the death of the father, for a Jewish family, the body was placed in a casket and put in a tomb so the body could decompose. And the family was led by the oldest son, and they sat together for 7 days to mourn. Now, after that time of mourning, and after that first burial, then life would go on as usual. And after a year or so, and after the body had decomposed, the bones of the father were collected and put in an ossuary, or just a box that holds bones. And then it was reburied, this time for good. So this is how, you know, good Jews honored their parents and loved God by following the Torah. And the man Jesus spoke to was in that year between the first and second burial. It's like, oh, okay, I get it now. So when Jesus calls this man to immediately follow him, he was put in this dilemma. The dilemma being, should he follow Jesus or should he follow the Torah? In doing this, Jesus equates loving God to having a personal relationship with Jesus. One loves God by following Jesus. This dilemma of the heart and soul is still put on us today. We will love God. Will we love God by following Jesus? You know, for most of us, it's not a choice of following the Torah or following Jesus, because most of us are not Jews here. But the dilemma is still there. There are other things that challenge us. Probably something to choose, maybe that's more comfortable, more acceptable. Maybe a man-made expression of being spiritual. We'd rather choose that over following Jesus. And I want to look at the life of Joseph and the life of Peter, two who loved God by following Jesus. And I want to look at how it challenged their heart and their soul. All right? So looking at Joseph first. He's the legal guardian and stepfather of Jesus. His soul and his identity was challenged in loving God by following Jesus. For Joseph, he had to unravel his reputation. And reputation is what others thought of him. He had to unravel his reputation from his identity, who he really was before God. And he had to value God, what God thought of him, more than what he thought of himself or what others thought of him. Joseph was in a real dilemma that challenged his very soul to love God. Joseph was called a righteous man by the scriptures. And in his day, people would have used the Hebrew word tzaddik to label Joseph. He studied and observed the Torah. He recited and lived the Shema. He followed the food laws. He supported the synagogue, and he celebrated all the holy days that were done in Jerusalem. Joseph was a tzaddik, a reputation that was very desirable. But before their marriage, word is out. Word is out that Mary is pregnant, and it's not a good thing. And if Joseph continues his relationship with Mary, people will start talking about him. They will associate him with those Torah tacky people of their day who eat ham sandwiches, pass on tithing, and hang out with Gentiles. And there's a Jewish label for these kind of Torah tacky people, but I won't bore you with another Hebrew word. But the women who dabble in sexual relationships before marriage have this label put on them. And this is what the neighbors think Mary has done. And this is the label that they're putting on Mary. And if Joseph marries such a woman, he's going to lose his reputation of a Tzaddik. And when Joseph, when he goes and consults the books of Moses, the law, the Torah, he learns what he's to do with Mary, who was, in his mind, either raped or seduced. If she was seduced, the Torah says both her and the seducer must be stoned to death. If she was raped, the rapist is to be put to death. But if no one confesses, she's to drink the waters of bitterness. And this was kind of a test where they took ashes from the altar, mixed it with water. And if she drank it and she died from the water, then it meant she's guilty. And if she drank it and she didn't die, then she was innocent. And in the midst of these options, Joseph hears Mary's story. And she claims that she was neither raped nor seduced. But her pregnancy is a result of a miracle. God did it. He loves her. Joseph loves her, but if Joseph marries her, he loses his reputation. And this is what he's struggling with. And he's scratching his head. And he's thinking, but what if Mary is telling the truth? I mean, I've never known her to lie before. She's always lived a life of purity before. She's never told extreme stories or crazy things. Would God really do something like this? So Joseph is struggling with God. Will he love God by obeying the Torah, or will he love Mary and take her as his wife? With his reputation on the line, Joseph chooses a private divorce to avoid public humility to Mary. And he hopes that maybe there won't be a spectacle, that maybe things will be overlooked. Maybe she'll just get lumped in with those Torah-tacky people. And maybe she wouldn't be punished. And that's what he chooses to do until an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and tells him that Mary is a virgin. It's true what she says. The baby is a miracle of the Holy Spirit. And the child that she's carrying is to be the Savior of all people. And that he should take Mary to be his wife. You know, the angel tells him, don't be afraid to make Mary your wife. Well, why would he be afraid? Well, he knows. He knows of his friends. There's probably only going to be one or two that actually believe this story. No one's going to believe this. If Joseph listens to the voice of God and obeys, his reputation is ruined in the public square. Joseph is going to have to surrender his soul. He's going to have to surrender his will. He's going to have to surrender his reputation, his identity. You see, the minute we turn to the Lord to find our true identity, that's the day reputation dies. That's the day reputation dies. We don't know what Joseph's parents thought, but we know what his heavenly Father thought. I remember one time when we were traveling and challenging students to take their Bible to school with them and to start student-led outreaches on their campuses to share the gospel. And I remember this young girl coming forward, and she was a popular girl in her school and did the cheerleader thing and all the other trappings that go along with that whole popularity thing. And she wanted to do this. She wanted to take her Bible to school, and she wanted to start student-led outreach. And everyone was so excited for her, but her mother pulled her aside and said, if you do this, you're going to lose your reputation. You can't do this. You won't do this. And the girl walked away crying. And I just thought to myself, man, this girl, she wanted to love God, and she wanted to express it in a certain way. She wanted to tell her friends about the love of God. And I just thought, man, if carrying a Bible school would ruin your reputation, what kind of reputation do you have? Maybe it's worth ruining. Maybe it's worth ruining. The day we hand our identity over to God, that's the day reputation dies. And that's what Joseph did. The Bible simply says he did what he was told. The Bible is full of so many understatements. My wife gets so frustrated with that. She says, there needed to be a woman writer. Would have been more details in the Bible then. But he did what he was told. Soon Joseph, he gives Mary's little boy a name. And he makes the relationship with the child legal. by doing this. And Joseph's reputation got worse, but his identity was getting better. He was legally tied to two people with bad reputations. Mary is perceived as an adulteress, and Jesus is perceived as an illegitimate child. Joseph is no longer a Tzaddik. He is the husband of Mary and the legal father of Jesus. Joseph chooses to love God by following this child, Jesus, and therefore loves God with his soul, knowing that identity, who he is before God, is more important than his reputation and who he is in the circle of his pious friends. That's loving God with all your soul, loving God with your identity. Well, let's look at Peter. Let's look at Peter and the idea of loving God with all your heart. How does he love God by following Jesus? I think Peter's story gives us a little understanding of how most people's hearts don't automatically jump to all of your heart. Getting to all of your heart is sometimes hard for most of us. You know, sometimes it's a step by step, piece by piece, to all of my heart. You know, it's tough in Christianity and in Christian circles because sometimes people will doubt your faith and your salvation by your lack of love. And the Bible seems to say that love is a true test by which the world can judge us, and that other Christians are allowed to examine whether the fruit of love exists in our lives. So it is a true test, but it's tough. It's tough when people doubt. And in looking at Peter's life, though, you know, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to tell when did faith begin in his life? When was he converted? It's kind of hard to point it out when you look at his life. When does he get that spiritual birth certificate? It says, you were born again on this day. Is it when he was introduced to Jesus by his brother Andrew, who believed that Jesus was the Messiah? At that moment, Jesus gives him the name Rock. Gives him the name Peter. Was it at that moment that he came to the Lord? Or was Peter converted when, as a fisherman, professional fisherman, he obliges Jesus the carpenter and lets down his nets to pull in this amazing catch that freaks him out? And he runs and falls to his knees before Jesus and declares to Jesus, I am a sinful man. Was it then? Was it then that he was converted? Or was Peter converted when he was prodded by Jesus? And Jesus said, hey, who do you say I am? And he says, you're the Messiah. You're the Son of God. Or is Peter only converted after the death and resurrection of Jesus, when he's asked three times by Jesus, do you love me? Peter says, yes, 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 I love you. Was it here that Peter was converted? Or could it only have happened when he and the others received the Holy Spirit at Pentecost? You know, no one doubts that Peter is converted, but we may not be sure when. We may not be sure when the moment occurs, when he gets his spiritual birth certificate. You know, it seems that coming and faith being worked into our hearts, or coming to that place where we say yes to Jesus, or that time when we say someone is converted, is really a bit of a mystery. I always used to think that it was pretty solid. It's an event. But when I look at the life of Peter, I wonder if it's more than an event. That maybe it's a process sometimes. It seems to be in Peter's life that conversion is a series of gentle nods of his heart to Jesus. The question of when somebody is converted is much less important than that they are converting. Every time Peter learns something new about Jesus, he reorients his heart and his life. But sometimes he lapses back and he falls backwards. And he doesn't look much of like a Christ follower. You see, our perception of who Jesus is can't be charted on a straight line graph. You know, we all wish that our growth in Jesus Christ and our learning how to love God and love others was like this. Just this steady upward climb. But you know what? Most of us, our growth and walk and following Jesus is like this. That's what it looks like. See, titles, definitions, and perceptions of Jesus are not the issue. Response to Jesus is the issue. You see, if full understanding of Jesus Christ, including theological sophisticated thoughts on his nature, his person, his eternal qualities, his relationship to the Father and the Spirit are required for us to be Christ followers, if that's required for us to be converted, you know what? Then none of us are going to make it for one simple reason. No one understands the fullness of the person of Jesus Christ. You're going to be exploring the depths of Jesus Christ and his riches for eternity, and you will not come to the end of it. He is great. He is mighty. He is the Lord. For some folks, you know, their conversion is like that of the Apostle Paul. You know, there was a big blinding light for Paul. And the Lord spoke to him, and he knew, and he believed at that moment. Went off, got baptized. Then he not only believed and followed Jesus, he started telling everybody about Jesus, wherever he went. Everything, it went one moment from, you know, anti-Jesus to, I am all about Jesus. And I am for Jesus. I'm talking about Jesus. It was amazing. You know, some people are like the Apostle Paul. They know the exact date and time of their conversion. And they can describe a big moment like Paul had. But that's not Peter's story, is it? It's not. You look at the scriptures, and it's hard to find. Now, I'm sure that there's certain denominations that they're going to point out to one thing or another in Peter's life and say, yeah, that was the moment there. That's when he came to the Lord. But we read the scriptures in their entirety. We don't leave certain ones out. See, there's a gradual growth of what he understood about Jesus and a gradual growth in his willingness to go public with his faith. That willingness to let his heart and love for Jesus to be known. See, most of the scenarios that I mentioned of Peter's life and his encounters with Jesus, they were in private. They weren't out among the others. They were just with the disciples, or just he and Jesus. And he was handing his heart to Jesus piece by piece until there was a moment when Peter began to love Jesus publicly. And we know Peter unashamedly named Jesus as Lord from the day of Pentecost forward. But even after that, Peter was still learning to love God by following Jesus. There was still part of his heart that disapproved of Gentiles, those people that weren't Jews. And he didn't like being around them. He didn't want to talk to them. He didn't want to associate with them until the Lord showed Peter that to love God with all his heart, Peter needed to love the Gentiles by sharing the gospel with them. So Peter did eventually give all his heart that he knew to give, just like we will someday. And we just keep giving piece by piece. You know, it was no longer for Peter a private love or a partial love. Peter hung and died on a cross in Rome because of his full love for Jesus Christ. I want to ask Jazz and the others to come on up, and they're going to lead us in a song. And as they do, there's some questions I want to ask you as they come up to lead us. I guess maybe I don't want to ask you, have you converted to being a Christ follower? But I want to ask you, are you converting to being a Christ follower? Are you in process? Is it happening now? Jesus tells us to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. Are you loving God with your soul, your identity, who you are? Or are you like Joseph? Does your reputation still have to die? Are you taking steps in surrendering more of your heart to Jesus, like Peter? Are you taking steps to moving from a private to a public love of God and a public loving of others? Are you loving God by following Jesus? Or are you making up your own comfortable, acceptable, man-made ways to appear spiritual or to appear as a lover of God? Jesus said, love God by following me and love others. So hear, O Highland, hear, O Asheville, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And the second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. You know what? The best use of life is love. And the best expression of love is your time. And the best time is now. So maybe you need a moment to say, Lord, I want to give you my heart. I want to give it to you. All that I know that's there that I can give. Maybe later down the line, I'll see there's more in my heart that needs to give. But right now, there's this much I see in my heart, and I want to give it to you. I know I've been holding it back. If you want to do that, I'd love for you to express that in some way to the Lord in prayer. And I'd love to pray with you and do that. And if you're somebody, you know, you've already had that moment, you know, you've already had that birth certificate moment, and now it's just more about taking another step, loving God with all your heart. Maybe you just need a time by yourself and the Lord just to talk to Him about that. Then this space up here, these chairs on the front, they're here for you. And if you feel like you need to express that outwardly, to pray in some way outwardly, you can come up here. No one's going to talk to you. No one's going to say, can I pray with you? You just have that moment here to yourself and with the Lord. But if you're here and you're saying, I've never done that. I've never said, Lord, right now, right here, I want to give you my life, my heart. Then I'd love to pray with you over there. So Jazz is going to sing, and this is your moment.